Well, there's no such thing in a good Irish Catholic household. You know that now, don't you? I'm Māori Aborigine, right? Taken away, put into a Pākehā whānau that didn't even know that I had Māori Aborigine background. And they were Irish Catholics. I grew up with nuns that told us that sex did not count and that you were not sexual, that one day you would get married and then you would know about it.
For me, I think the most important thing is being able to be an individual, because I'm pretty independent, I'm pretty possessive of my independence, and I need space, and I need to know that someone I'm with is okay with having space.
Nau mai, haere mai. Welcome to One in Five. I'm Meg Tall, and today on the panel, in the Hamilton studio, in the Lavender Corner, we have Huhana Hiki, solicitor,
kia ora.
Kia ora, Huhana, solicitor and human rights consultant, affectionately known as the Legalator. In the pink corner, we have Philip Patston, managing director of Diversity Works Group. He's also an ambisexual theorist. That's for people whose sexuality is so diverse they don't really know what they are.
Thank you for clearing that up. I wondered.
In the blue corner, we have Charles Tohori, who works for the Royal New Zealand Foundation for the Blind. What is your actual role?
I'm needs assessor.
Needs assessor. Kia ora, Charles. And is also an aspiring surfer dude.
Thank you.
Do you assess sexual needs as well as
well? That's another panel. In the orange corner, we have Maria Anderson, radio presenter in training and known in internet chat rooms as Phyllis.
Aye, very true.
Welcome, all of you. What type of messages did you take in as a child or a young person about intimate partner-type relationships? Maria, why don't you start?
Went to Catholic school, was a no-no. My background is I'm Samoan, so it's there's all these culture expectations. But I'm sort of one of those people that apply the rules to me when it suits me, and thankfully my mother didn't go completely off her rocket with that. I'm just an open person. I am open to anyone, really, male, female. I just apply the general basic rules, I think. Honesty, reliability, responsibility. I'm quite lenient on maturity. So, yeah.
No,
doesn't bother me.
Yeah. What about you, Charles? What kind of ideas did you get about partner relationships as a child or a young person?
I guess, like, when I grew up back at school days, I mean, I just hanged out with my mates, and some of those were chicks, and we just sort of, you know, we're good friends. And then later on, I guess I didn't really have any serious relationships till later on after I left school and settled down a bit more and stopped being a kid and started growing up a bit more and being a bit more responsible. I guess my disability didn't really come into it. I just kept it real, and my parents and my family were pretty supportive about that. And yeah, I was pretty easy-go-lucky person. So.
Sounds good. So you've grown up immature, but Maria's doesn't mind if people are immature. What about you, Philip? What kind of ideas did you get about your future partners from whatever was around you as a child or a teenager?
Well, I do remember quite early in my teenage years being in a situation where a friend of mine and I were in a conversation. Someone said that he should be somewhere to meet this young woman, and I remember saying, do you think I should be there as well? And the response was, oh, well, no, why would she want to meet you, sort of thing. And it was just devastating. No, I just never got.
That's a very sad story, Philip.
It's kind of a moot point now, given that she was a young woman. But I think probably that did sit in the depths of my psyche for a number of years and sort of made me question whether, you know, I was attractive or whether I not so much attractive, but what could I offer to right. someone in terms of a relationship and being disabled.
Yeah. So the message you kind of absorbed was, yeah, were you suitable even to,
and
to be with someone?
Yeah, and it was sort of a comparison, you know, if she had a choice between my non-disabled mate and me, who would she choose, you know? So, yeah.
Mm.
I think I'm over it now. Jess.
Well, we can arrange therapy.
Okay. What they probably meant was, you know, why would she want him because he's a big homosexual?
Exactly.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly the point I was trying to make. Because it wasn't about disability, it was about the fact he didn't like girls.
Oh, maybe. So, Huhana, what kind of ideas did you get about relationships as a child or a young person?
Well, there's no such thing in a good Irish Catholic household. You know that now, don't you?
Ah.
I mean, I was raised, I'm Māori Aborigine, right?
Yeah.
Taken away, put into a Pākehā whānau that didn't even know that I had Māori Aborigine background. And they were Irish Catholics. And I mean, we had a cross in every room, the saints of, you know, the Joseph and the Jesus and the Mary pictures everywhere. And our aunties and our cousins were all nuns, and so were the fathers. They were our priests and they were our uncles. And so I grew up with nuns that told us that sex did not count and that you were not sexual, that one day you would get married and then you would know about it. And my experiences were full of curiosity because I was also abused by cousins and by some family members outside of the immediate family. And so my experience was that this was going to be the future. I had to get married and have children. And it horrified me right from the beginning. I mean, I had children, never got married. But the horrifying part was, is that all that there is for me? And that was all that was expected. And the whole future before me just seemed dim. So I went down a very negative road of low self-esteem, hating myself. But one thing that I do remember, I was about 10, is I do remember the old, you be the daddy, I be the mummy with my girl school friends, because I went to a Catholic school. And I've always insisted, I've never forgotten it. I've seen this school friend a couple of years ago and I thought, do you remember? But I don't think she does. So now she's probably going to listen on the radio and go, oh my God. I didn't know what a lesbian was. I thought there were girls called Leslies because that was the only name, because I was that naive, okay? That's how naive. So I also thought that to like girls meant I had to become a boy, because I didn't feel particularly amorous towards dresses, which my mother used to dress me identical to my baby sister in the same dress. The first day I got a pair of trousers, I held on to those babies. And I didn't particularly like makeup. They had to hold me down and strap me down to put makeup on me. Nowadays, my son just enjoys that. Absolutely natural to him, but to me it's not. And I didn't know what a lesbian was. Honestly.
No, it's quite
that's
a mysterious thing when you're a child.
Oh,
I
well,
think.
I'm glad I found out. I was very happy when I discovered that it's okay and I never looked back.
Well, I think we'll save some of that for the sexuality panel.
I've just got this image of you being held down, having lipstick smeared all over your face.
It was. I was literally held down because they tried to feminise me and it was horrible.
No, that doesn't sound fun at all. So what kind of qualities are you looking for in a person in an intimate relationship?
They have
God, it's a dating show now.
No.
They have to fascinate my mind. And my mind has to be, they have to capture my mind. They have to capture my heart. And my mind, I mean, the biggest sex organ is the brain. And believe me, if you can break into that, you've got me. It's
right,
not an easy area to break.
Huhana's looking for someone intellectually stimulating.
I have someone intellectually stimulating.
You do. It's true. Charles, what are you looking for in an intimate relationship?
I just like someone that's That's a hard question. I guess this is someone that I'm a bit shy. I guess I'm looking for someone, I guess that can relate to me as well as being happy and, I mean, capturing that whole experience and having that all in one page is, I guess, you have to find that. And, I mean, it's really nice when you do because then you can relate to each other and...
Yep, Philip?
I don't care anyone will do it.
I don't believe that. You've got more standards than that. Come on, tell us about your dream person.
Honestly, just call this number.
0800.
0800, anyone will do.
Ambisexual.
For me, I think the most important thing is looks. No. Is being able to be an individual and be in a relationship as two individuals because I'm pretty independent. I'm pretty possessive of my independence and I need space and I need to know that someone I'm with is okay with having space. So that's important and a nice ass.
Okay, Maria.
He just took the words right out of my mouth.
Well, look, when you find him...
I think my experience with dating's been something like, without sounding like a martyr or whatever, is I just have it's in my nature to give a lot, and I think that a lot of people out there take advantage of it and when I get with someone and I give a lot, it sort of feels like that. They're taking it in the respect that they have really been misunderstood and dealt with all their hard blows through life. And here I come along and I'm understanding and I'm there to listen. And that's great. It's why I do it. I genuinely want to give and I genuinely want to listen and all that sort of jazz. But I would like someone who can see past that and say, Maria, it's great that you're giving, but let me give you a little. Mm. Yeah.
So someone that can give that back to you as well. That level of understanding.
The ball back.
Yeah.
Pass that ball back, yeah.
Yep. That sounds fair. So do each of you think that your disabilities or other factors about you or your life have affected your dating or forming intimate relationships? Hannah, yes. Why don't you start?
Yes, it has in the past. I I feel very old and stable and settled now as an old married woman, but because I have somebody who has completely looked past all of that and has accepted me for who I am, gives me my independence, doesn't take but gives, and as well as, you know, it's reciprocal. But in the past, yes, it was actually used against me, and emotional blackmail was strong. And as the progression has happened, people would start telling me, oh, you can stay out of your wheelchair. Oh, no, you stay on those sticks. And they would start putting that on you, that you weren't good enough for them because you needed your wheelchair or you didn't have the energy to keep up with them. And they would actually really use it to turn it around against you. And that became a real problem. And one day I just turned around and said, no more. And I think that's the day when I gave up and thought, well, I'm quite happy to live on my own for the rest of my life. And hey, my hun turned into my life and it's been like that since. I won't compromise. But what I was asked to do a lot of times was to compromise. And I refuse to do that now.
Right, so you're in a good relationship now, but in the past, in intimate relationships, people have used your kind of variability and energy or the fact that you're sometimes in a wheelchair and sometimes not against you and in a kind of odd power over way.
It was another form of abuse, and particularly the thing I find within the takatāpui, or not so much takatāpui, but maybe the mainstream lesbian community, extremely elitist when it comes down to impairment. They don't want to be seen with us, generally, because they find that we show them their frailty. We show them the weakness of what can exist as you get older, maybe, or the fact that they were traditionally carers in the past, they don't want to be seen as caregivers. So it's an issue, and it's an unaddressed issue in New Zealand.
Yeah, and access is certainly an issue for most communities. Philip, you had something you wanted to say about that?
I've been glib.
Oh, yes, what were you going to glibly say?
See, I didn't say they all meet this and go, where can we meet so that Huhana can't come?
I knew it, eh? I knew it. I knew it was a ploy. It's a ploy, isn't it?
Sorry, darling, just joking.
But yeah,
that's it, I'm devastated now.
It can make it difficult to meet people and be in social groups when access isn't taken into consideration. Getting back on the slight topic of have the disabilities affected you in forming intimate relationships? Other people have thoughts on that?
Well, I think earlier, like when I was younger, I was just thinking I was in a relationship for a while with a Māori man, and we got into this who's more oppressed argument, and that was
it's always
like
a pointless game to play.
You're going to lose, Philip.
Yeah, you are.
I'm just going to play the tangata whenua card. You're out of luck.
I did not have that tangata whenua trump. So, but I think as I've got older, it's become less and less an issue. I think in terms of meeting men, it is an issue, especially the body-conscious culture of gay men. You know, it's just you can't compete. And even if you look good body-wise, slap on a wheelchair and a bit of a, you know, a coordination difference and you just, you know, go to the back of the queue sort of thing. So, and I mean, I think that's all, you know, what I call dysfunction phobia, that, you know, for gay men, because the body image is so important, as soon as they see a disabled person or somebody with you know, different function, it's all a reflection of their fear. You know, what would I feel like if I ended up in a wheelchair or if I wasn't as beautiful as I am? And, you know, and it sort of, I think, carries into the age thing, you know, what will happen when I'm older and I can't trade on my looks sort of thing. So I think, you know, we often reflect people's fears and that becomes a mission in itself, having to deflect that reflection. And, you know, honestly, these days I just go, can't be bothered, rather sleep, you know.
Yeah, fair comment. Charles, I'm interested in your perspective as someone with a vision impairment. I mean, what Philip's just talking about is quite a lot involved around how people look and how people are attracted to people, how they look. Has your vision impairment, do you think it affects how people date differently?
Well, for myself, I don't think so. Like, I guess I didn't really start thinking about girls and stuff until I was maybe in my senior years at school. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I'm just like, they were just all mates and we just hung out. And I guess it just sort of happens as you get older, you start to get interested in the opposite sex. So that sort of started to happen for me. But I didn't really think too much about looks. I guess it was more about the personality of the person and if I was going to relate to that person. And, you know, what interest she had. Like, she definitely had to be interested in sports or else it's not going to work out at all. Because I was really quite involved in sports after I left school and continuing on to today. So that was really important. But so looks wasn't an issue and I didn't mind too much about that.
Look, have you got any blind gay mates that you can introduce me to?
Will you stop trying to pick people up? So So that's interesting, Charles, for you, a barrier would have been more if someone wasn't interested in sports than perhaps disability kind of issues.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, my disability, I never thought that it would get in the way of having a relationship. And the way that I thought about it is that this is who I am and this is what I have. So, I mean, you either accept this or, you know, we don't have a relationship. And that's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's more these other things that I was interested in, and hopefully that person would share those same things with me.
Yep. I think that's a good attitude to have. Well, thank you, Maria Anderson, Philip Patston, Charles Tohori, and Huhana Hiki for being on the panel today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.